Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. We're going to call the Planning and Development and Real Estate Committee to order. And the first item on our agenda is a motion to go into executive session. I'm going to ask you if you'd just read that one, I'd rather.
I'll get my glasses out.
Put your glasses on. That makes it much easier.
I move that the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee need an executive session to discuss real estate issues with respect to the sale of the Roslyn Bus Alley in accordance with Board Procedure Roman numeral 6G and contractual issues with respect to the Florida Avenue developer selection in accordance with Board Procedure numeral 6D.
Is there a second? Hearing a second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, we'll now go into executive session upstairs. We'll reconvene at the end of the session.
Yes.
We will reconvene the Planning and Development Committee meeting following an executive session. And I have a motion that I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge, and with no individual member dissenting, that at the just concluded executive session, only such matters as authorized for discussion in executive session under Board Procedure 6, and only those matters identified in the motion by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'll move to the agenda. Are there any questions and acceptance of the agenda as follows? Hearing no objection. First item is the approval of the March 27th minutes. Yes, Mr. Benjamin, any questions?
I do have some modifications. Do you want me to submit them or read them out loud, or?
Would you note the subject areas that you have?
Certainly can. Page 2 on the bottom dealt with the issue of whether there was an additional $9 million that would go into the operating account. To the best of my knowledge, this is for the Southeast Bus Garage operations. To the best of my knowledge, there was only one $9 million, not two.
So I said nine, and that's what this says.
9.2.
And there was some clarifications in on page 3 near the bottom. There was a statement about what would have to go back to the jurisdictions for their approval, and a very short paragraph that starts with Mr. Cato. And not clear to me that that was in fact the case. Two paragraphs farther down were some comments that were attributed to me that, for instance, I never stated Virginia had agreed if the federal government could come up with, my statement was quite different from that, so I'd like to have those things edited or modified to change them. I can give you the changes I would like to make.
Why don't we accept the changes from Mr. Benjamin to be corrected submission for March 27th? They require changes, okay? Any others? Great.
So are we voting on them as modified?
As modified, and will be signed, yes. Okay, any questions? None, all those in favor?
Is there a motion?
I think there was.
Happy to move it. Move it with the changes that I described.
Okay, now, all those in favor of approving the changes?
Aye.
Thank you. The next action items, there are two action items out of executive session, and the first is the sale of Roslyn Bus Alley.
Madam Chairman?
Is there a motion?
Madam Chairman, I move that the committee recommend the board approve authorization for staff to enter into a sales agreement with the JBG companies for purchase of Vermont's Bus Alley at the Roslyn Metro Rail Station, and to allow Arlington County to use the proceeds from the sale of the Bus Alley's partially funded enhancements to the Roslyn Metro Rail Station.
Second. This is second discussion. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, approved. The second item from executive session is the Florida Avenue developer selection. Is there a motion? Mr. Graham?
I move that this matter be deferred for a period of not less than 60 days.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Questions, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. Moving to the next, item C is the policy concerning use of Ramada property on non-Ramada transit projects. Mr. Devine?
Madam Chair, if we could, we have item B first. Item B would be the Royal Street relocation project.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have a press conference with Mayor at 10:30. May I respectfully ask that...
Mr. Graham is requesting that we switch to item C.
C, please.
I'm here already, but I don't get it.
Jim, I don't have you on my schedule.
Okay, any objection?
I don't have you on the schedule for a press conference.
Oh, yes.
The mayor's here.
I'll tell him you said that.
Apparently, there's another mayor.
Oh, there is?
Okay. Since Mr. Graham has asked, and since we have the agenda switched around anyway, probably, let's move on to item C, which is the policy concerning the Ramada.
Mr. Bottomheimer will make a presentation.
All right, thank you very much. Do not be a presentation with this, a PowerPoint presentation, really speaking from the proposed resolution, which you can find on page 20 of 38 in your packets. And the background to this is that the board has an established policy for how to deal with reimbursable projects in which any system expansion, a transit project that local jurisdiction brings forward on metro property is funded in its entirety by the local jurisdiction. This is the basis for the way that Dulles Rail extension has been funded, and all the way to small station entrances and things of that sort. All costs, as I said, the land cost, construction costs, Ramada staff time, have been billed to the jurisdiction. And what we're bringing today is a proposed policy that covers the use of our land in situations where we'd like to be able to use our land to promote projects and support projects that we think are needed improvements to the transit system. We've encountered this this need. We've thought about it at the Roslyn Station with the project that was just approved, used the sale proceeds for the elevators at Roslyn to fund Arlington County's substantial investment in elevators and a new entrance there. We also prospectively anticipate encountering it for the Purple Line in Maryland and for the district streetcar projects, both of which we would anticipate would need metro land to make connections at our stations. In Maryland, it would be College Park and New Carrollton, also crossing over to Silver Spring Station. And in the district in Anacostia, most notably, and potentially other stations as well. And there may even in Virginia streetcars in future be connections at our stations that require the use of metro land. This policy basically goes to the second page, and we're basically saying that if there's a request by a sponsoring jurisdiction for the transfer of authority property at no cost to the sponsoring jurisdiction, or to a non-governmental entity for consideration at the behest of a sponsoring organization, jurisdiction, and in connection with a reimbursable project or transit project that would improve transit, then we're asking that the Board of Directors consider that that transfer be approved under the conditions as we put down. There's no additional cost to as we've written it, no cost to the authority. The transfer won't adversely affect the authority's operations, or its operating or capital improvement project budgets. And finally, that the transfer receives the approval of the Federal Transit Administration. And in the situation where the land is sold to a non-governmental entity as part of a jurisdictionally sponsored project, that the proceeds of that sale be pledged to the transit system investment, which is the case at Roslyn with Roslyn Station with the elevators. And we also wanted to make sure in this resolution that we're clarifying that the policy would not apply to joint development projects, but this is really reimbursable projects and transit system improvements. So that is the policy as we presented it, and we invite discussion on this.
Okay. In developing the policy, our overall objective was to ensure that we were able to capture from our property and reinvestments that would come back to transit-related uses?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Mr. Benjamin.
Two things. One is a technical, and one is a much broader philosophical issue that I have. The technical one is that I don't think we want to say that Federal Transit Administration approval is always required, because we do own some property that does not have federal funds in it, therefore federal approval would not be necessary in those. But on a broader basis, what we have here is a set of criteria that are, as I read them, sort of a double negative. Unless this does something awful to us, we'll do it. I'm a little bit concerned that leaves open a whole bunch of potential misuses of the concept that we have here, and I'd much rather see a positive statement. Let me give an example. Under this, if Metro owned 2 acres of land in Montgomery County, and we said we're going to put a bus shelter on part of it, I don't see anything in here that would say that land shouldn't be transferred. In the same way, if we said we want to do transit-oriented development on this land, I don't see anything here that says that the land shouldn't be transferred. I'd much rather see a positive statement, a statement that says that the benefits of this transfer would be evaluated, that they would be in some way commensurate with the value of that land and the value to the region at large, and that would then be presented to the board for approval. So that would be a positive thing. You'd have at least some hurdle you would have to get over that says this has got to have some value to the authority and to the region in a transportation way that is somewhat commensurate with the land, and that would have to be demonstrated and presented to the board. So I'd rather see a complete reversal of the way this is stated.
Comment, Mr. Gano, because I understand your point in asking for a more positive statement of it, but are we not asking, and I'll use your bus stop piece, we have a transit-oriented development policy. So if I would follow that scenario, would we have other measurements that we would use to measure this? Is this?
Yes, we do have.
Mr. Benjamin is saying it's not comprehensive enough to protect the authority.
And I will ask legal counsel to review that, but the intent was, again, it's to ensure that any change that we make or any easement that we allow on our property or use of the land owned by Metro would be to the benefit either of Metro directly or transit within the region. That is the intent. It doesn't specifically state that, but if we could add.
I think if it said something about commensurate with the land, the value of the land is there. I mean, otherwise we get into I put a bus shelter there and I get 2 to 5 acres of land. That. I don't think it needs to be too tight, but it has to at least be in the right direction.
Mr. Zimmerman.
To follow up on Benjamin's point, I think both of the things that were offered up will probably be improvements. I understand the intent here, which is good, but this does seem to have been pretty broad. The two things to which I believe it would apply that so far acted upon, involve direct, the transaction results in an enhanced facility for the agency. In fact, the one that before us today, that we just voted on earlier, is specifically to enhance that facility. So I understand why there's the feeling that there's a need for a policy that specifically says that that's an okay thing for us to do. The policy is drawn here is much broader than that. It's not necessarily bad, because you don't have to go out to the limits of it, but it seems like it's doing more than we were trying to accomplish. I don't know that I want us to consider this just because somebody can make some kind of connection between a transaction and transit improvement somewhere, but if it's specifically enhancing this agency's facility, then clearly you ought to be able to take the benefit of our asset and put it into our facility, and it's through the mechanism of a particular jurisdiction, well, great, it's not getting in the way. I think this may be broader than
that. Mr. Graham?
The reason I wanted to comment on this is that I've recently been reminded of something, and, you know, I was the chairman of the Real Estate Committee. And I was recently reminded that there are these little tiny parcels, sometimes landlocked, you know, land that relates only to an adjacent neighbor and so on. And I would, it's already picked up, I think, really from the old bus line many years ago, which are may or may not be properly attended to in terms of maintenance and so on. And I would like us to consider the possibility of using this proposal in a way where we could be able to dispose of these properties, particularly to an adjacent use or to a municipal or jurisdictional use that may or may not involve fencing. But we don't need this property. There's nothing we're using it for. There's no foreseeable future use of it. It's just being carried at a cost of cutting the grass and whatnot. So these, I unfortunately, I don't have an amendment because I just focused on this. But, you know, I hope that we could look at this part of this, because this is strictly applies only to transit. And some of these little parcels, which have nothing to do with FTA, by the way, had to do with the old bus company, you ought to be able to do something with that. So let me turn that as a question, if I may, Madam Chair. Get a response.
Well, I think the situations that you're referring to, I think we actually have flexibility to make the transactions that you're proposing and requesting. I think we're comfortable with, you know, when something is operationally accessed to making that available on that basis. I'm not sure that it's necessary to incorporate it in this policy. I think we have the flexibility to do that.
I've just got to go, but can we then just create an exception? Can we just have a quick amendment allowing for an exception for those situations? Because otherwise, this applies full force and it completely limits us for the crappy piece.
May I have a clarification on Mr. Graham's question? You're simply saying we have excess property, and should we, this is a parcel and it has no transit use and it's excess, and so we should have surplus and we should be able to have it. And I thought we did, too. I thought we had
the ability today to do that.
Does this policy, if we adopt it, adversely impact that ability? Because this doesn't take any.
I don't believe it adversely impacts it at all.
Yeah.
Can we just be sure of that? Because if that's the case, does this impact the surplus property abilities of the model? Not at all.
Not at all.
There's no response. Okay. All right. Are there any questions? Other questions? Hearing none. This is an action item on our agenda today, and there have been some changes, some recommended changes, and I think probably a good opportunity. Do you have, Mr. Zimmerman?
I was going to suggest a way forward. But.
Okay. Yes. Do you have a motion?
Okay. Actually, I was going to just suggest that we defer this, give staff more time to work on it, and bring it back at a later date.
Okay. Is there a second on that? Thank you. Did you have a question?
Second.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Lynn, there's a second. Any other discussion? Not hearing all those in favor of deferring this and coming back?
Aye.
Opposed?
Madam Chairman, just one point when this comes back. I think that staff ought to be prepared to lay out meeting the distinction between the different ways we dispose of property now. Joint development. There is also a surplus property process that has been used as well. It speaks to some of the things that Graham was referring to. And this, I mean, maybe there's more than two, but I know of two at least. And this is introducing kind of a third. I think it should be laid out so people understand the differences in the nature of the types of.
We would do that.
And I think that's a good point, because I think this also talks, this speaks a different way of our jurisdictional relationships in this property here as well. Okay, thank you. Thank you for those. Now we can get back to the, which is Royal Street relocation project.
John Thomas will make a presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board committee. We're here to obtain a concurrence from the Planning and Development Real Estate Committee. Approval from the board to establish a project for the replacement of the Royal Street Bus Garage, establish a project budget of $4.3 million, and to authorize tasks P2D for an alternatives analysis of the public hearing planning process. Benefits of this action would be replacement of an outdated and deteriorated 1945 garage, and it'll provide a modern facility to enhance our maintenance and service reliability. Implications on service, we do not believe that this would affect any of the routes currently served by the Royal Street Bus Garage, but there could be a potential for increased deadhead cost depending upon the final site selection for the garage. A little bit of background, the City of Alexandria, developers and community surrounding the bus garage are in favor of redeveloping the site to a higher and better use. There have been 12 sites identified throughout the Northern Virginia and the district as potential relocation sites. That's been whittled down to three. You'll see that on the two graphics that follow this sheet. We needed to go through the planning process by doing an alternatives analysis and basically putting the three sites that have survived the initial paring down through a much more rigorous process. Anything that survives that, we then take to our public hearing to garner official input on that particular site or sites. The funding for all this early work is proposed to come from two sources, an FTA grant and local funds that have been matched by Virginia Department of Rail Transportation. Next two slides show the 12 sites that have been identified over the years, and they were initially thought to be, you know, possible sites for a new garage, and upon sort of preliminary investigation over the years, they've been whittled down to the three that are on the next site. Two of them are down the 95 corridor, and the third one is the site we have talked about with the board for the potential relocation site for Southeast Bus Garage. Our recommendation is that the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee concur and forward to the board for approval the establishment project for the replacement of the Royal Street Bus Garage, establishment $4.3 million project budget, authorization of tasks to P2D for the alternatives analysis and public hearing planning process.
Madam Chairman, could I just comment on the financing of this project? Since we sent out this package and our further discussions in attempting to ensure that the financing can be of the alternatives analysis and the public hearing process can be completed with the federal funds, that's still in question. So we just want to assure the committee that even though we are recommending this project, we're hoping that the acceptance of the federal government or wording changes in legislation will apply so that we are able to use these funds for this project as recommended by Mr. Thomas, and there's no intent of trying to find other funds at this time to do this work if it's not available through the grant process.
Yes, Mr. Zimmerman?
So you're talking about where that $4.3 million comes from?
No, there are grants that are available for the construction of a new facility to replace Royal Street.
In addition to this $4.3 million project?
Right? No, $4.3 million is available.
So that's the first thing.
We thought to start the process. There's a question as to whether we can use it for the alternatives analysis and the public hearing. We want to get that clarified, but we're hoping, I mean, we're requesting the approval that once we get that, we can move forward as described.
So assuming you can, this $4.3 million budget buys you design or something?
The money would not be used, and there is I think there are some of these funds that are soon to run out. So we're trying to capture the money for this project if we can.
I got that. I'm saying, okay, that's $4 million, $4.2 million if that all works out. What does that buy you?
That would hopefully buy us the alternatives analysis. It would buy us the public hearing process. Would start us down the process of the design of the facility.
There's a lot of talking about it. We still have to come up with money to acquire a piece of property and build a facility. It's just going to be a much
yes, that's true. Clearly. Yes.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Mr. Mayor, you'll.
Yeah, if I can have the honor of making a motion to approve this. This is something that certainly I've been working on for
almost my nine years on the board to ensure that this happens. It's long overdue, and I'm pleased to see that we're beginning to move this forward in a positive way, so certainly we'll have to do it.
We have a motion and a second. Okay, any further discussion on it?
I have a question.
Mr. Monomoy has a question, and then Mr. Benjamin. Yes.
What was that? Well, I'm sorry, I missed the discussion about the deliverable out of the AA, the alternative analysis, and did you speak to timeline or timeframe?
We would expect that after we do have money, we probably about 6 months before we'd have the public hearing.
And then, again, what were the deliverables, just analysis of the sites? Or
yeah, we're gonna go do a detailed analysis of each of the three sites to see what can sustain that more rigorous analysis, the impacts, and whether any impacts can be mitigated, or if they can't be mitigated, that may result in the site being sort of falling off, and then that wouldn't go to the public hearing.
No preliminary site design for any of the locations?
There'd be some concepts that would be put together to see whether it would actually work within the, you know, for the site that we have, and whether there are any issues that come up as we study the site more, whether that would prevent a layout from working.
I have three questions. One's just a very simple one. Is P2D the contractor, the consultant?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So that's who we're asking to do the work?
Yes, our on-call consultant.
And this may be a question for Mayor Ewell. Is there any consideration at this point to leave Royal Street before we have identified and found room for those buses at a replacement site?
I'd love for that to happen, but unfortunately, that will not happen.
So this is.
We need to find a site, right?
We're not going to end up with another one of these. We're going to put the buses somewhere and figure out where.
That's what I'm planning, sir.
Okay. And finally, I'm a little bit nervous about the way this resolution has been written. It does appear to be in conflict with the way Metro Matters works, and I'd like to get some either assurance or change that makes abundantly clear that this money doesn't offset Metro Matters money, which comes from the federal government, because the way it's written, it would appear to do that.
I believe the general counsel has a wording to ensure that does not.
Just at the capital budget, at least. Not capital improvement, but the capital budget. Would the maker of the motion
certainly
accept that?
That would mean.
Yes.
So there are two items there. Okay. Any other questions? So there is a amended motion on the floor. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Next item is an administrative item. Information item, and it is on future metro capacity.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could open up the presentation, that Mr. Harrison will make that presentation. Over the past few weeks, Metro's ridership and its rail system has exceeded on several occasions the top 10 ridership days in our history, and that is occurring almost weekly. As we look at the increases of ridership and going forward, we have identified in the future some capacity issue, and it's our belief that our responsibility as staff is to ensure that we not only plan for next year or 5 years, that we need to plan for 10, 15, 20, and 30 years into the future. So this is one of several presentations over the next several months that we will be bringing back to the board, looking at the future probability of needs for the system, And this one would deal specifically with the rail system, and later we will be bringing back presentations on the bus system as well as regional coordination. With that, I'm going to ask Mr. Hurson to make the presentation.
Good morning. This morning, we're going to discuss some work that the planning office has been involved in the last couple of years. We're going to talk about ridership growth trends out to 2030. We're going to look at the ability of the Metrorail system and stations to handle that growth, and then look at some recommended capital improvements that would enhance our capacity. And in terms of benefits and costs, the benefits are related to meeting our growing access and capacity needs, and the costs are associated with our needed capital improvements. The regional growth trends that underlie the ridership forecast we're going to talk about come from the Metropolitan Washington Council government's cooperative land use forecasts. And this is based on the Round 7 forecasts, which show significant growth in the region. I think what's interesting to us is how that growth change, you know, is varies across the region, with pretty high growth outside in the outer suburbs. As you get closer into the core, the percentages are a little lower, although, of course, the growth is still significant. As you can see, inside the Beltway, jobs are growing 23%. And then in terms of population, inside and outside, we're in about the 23 to 26% range. And those are the growth rates that really drive our peak hour, peak direction commuting, which is really the focus of today's presentation. This chart shows the projected daily ridership growth out to 2030. Under these new forecasts that we've developed, we're showing ridership approaching about 1 million riders a day by the year 2030. We also show on there in blue the 1999 board service expansion goal, which was to double ridership by 2023. Now, that plan included significant system expansion. It also included an assumption that we'd grow at roughly 3% a year. Our new forecasts are really a baseline. They assume what happens if all we do is build the constrained long-range plan that's already funded. And what you see is we're still growing. But sort of as you go into the out years, the land use forecast suggests that growth will taper off a bit, particularly as some of the inner suburbs start to reach build-out in some of their land use. Next slide gives you an idea of some of the growth at the station level. Really, the significant thing here is that our core stations continue to be the most heavily used stations in the system. We do start to see some of the inner ring activity centers, like Courthouse, Bethesda, Ballston, starting to emerge with more significant growth. Interestingly, the highest projected change in ridership is at Gallery Place. It's probably not surprising to people who know this area. And we also see some significant growth in the Roslyn-Ballston corridor as well. This slide illustrates the capacity analysis that we did. We looked at two things, system capacity and station capacity. For system capacity, we looked at the AM peak hour at the maximum passenger load point on each line. So we selected 5 points where the ridership was the highest on those segments. Because this is looking out to the future, we assumed a realignment of the blue line by 2010, just for the capacity analysis purposes, and the Dulles extension built before 2020. So in the graphic, you see blue on more than one segment there.
Excuse me.
Yes.
A question, Mr. Harrington.
I don't see anything there on the red line. Was that not considered?
I'm sorry, that one's a little hard to see. It's between Gallery Place and Metro Center, headed westbound.
How about the other direction?
This is the AM peak hour, so in that case, that is the current maximum load point, and we're saying that it'll remain the current future maximum load point.
Coming in from Shady Grove?
No, it's the westbound direction, so it would be...
I understand. Oh, okay. You're saying there's no maximum load point? Coming in from Shady Grove, which is the heaviest used?
The passenger loads, certainly in different sections of the system we've looked at, but the loads out, say, Whiteslink to Grosvenor are roughly half of the ones that you'll see in the core of the system. So by maximum load, we really are defining the highest ridership sections.
I understand, but normally Farragut North is a max load point. I don't see anything in Farragut North coming in.
And we looked at it, but the section of Gallery Place to Metro Center was slightly higher, and so that's the one that we're displaying. But we did look at all the sections in the system. Continue. Yeah. Next slide. This graphic displays the congestion information at those 5 points, and in the graphic, green represents an average peak hour of less than 100 persons per car. Yellow would be 100 to 120 persons per car, and red would be over 120 persons per car. I have to stress, this is an average for the entire peak hour for all trips. We know that if the average standard is we want a standard 120, we know that there will be people experiencing trips where the numbers are much higher than that. And we know that happens today, but this represents the average, and that's what we're using for planning purposes. As you can see, that without fleet expansion shown here, in other words, just the rail cars that we have on order that we expect to get this year, basically most lines are congested by 2020. One interesting thing is in 2010 we're showing an improvement. So as we've added 50% eight-car trains, you do see most lines looking better in 2010. And as you go out to the future, we're saying by 2020 you're going to see significant congestion across the system.
Question.
Yes.
This, when we first saw these, this particular kind of chart, it was before we ordered a whole lot more rail cars, and there was red showing up a lot sooner. You should dig out that chart. You should show what it is that we're able to do by the rail cars we've added. My question is, though, this assumes the growth that you projected in an earlier slide. You had a 42% growth by the year 2030. Yes? Okay. What is the growth we've had in the last 10 years?
Well, over the last 5 years, we've been a little bit under 3% a year growth on daily ridership. And from our analysis, we think the peak hour, peak direction has actually been a lower growth rate than that.
What I'm asking is, what has the cumulative growth rate been over the last 10 years?
Approximately in the 3% range.
Cumulative growth.
Oh, cumulative. Well, then approximately 30%.
A bit higher than that. We have to work up the math because it's
also higher than that, but it's cumulative. If you take the number in 1998 and you take the number in 2008, there's a certain amount of growth.
Yes.
I believe it's a big number.
It is a large number. It's greater than 30.
I think it may be comparable to the number you're projecting for the next 22 years. So if you're correct, what you're saying is transit growth will slow over the next 20 years in order for this to... No, I mean, that's what you're forecasting. You're forecasting a lower rate of growth over the next two decades than we've had in the last decade. That might be true, but it also might be wrong, and we might have greater growth than we've had in recent years. The obvious caveat that if you don't have the capacity to absorb them, then you can't. But I just want to point that this is making particular assumptions about growth in the future.
Right.
It would appear to me to be on the conservative side based on what's been happening in this region over the past decade or two. Thank you.
Mr. Benjamin has a question.
I'd like to pick up on that and follow through with another question also. If I understand this correctly, basically the growth that you're talking about is only population growth. It is not growth that would occur due to transfers of people who currently are using automobiles to transit because of increasing fuel costs, because of increasing congestion, and all the other factors that are likely to affect us over the next 20, 30 years.
It assumes a continuation of
the... So as Mr. Zimmerman pointed out, this is, if anything, an extremely conservative analysis. And we're probably going to see something substantially more significant in terms of level of growth than what this is projecting.
And just the growth over the last 10 years has been 44%.
Okay.
So we'll get that out there.
I'm sorry, repeat your number.
44% over the last 10 years.
So this is not pie in the sky stuff. This is, if anything, the situation is going to be substantially worse. One other question. You did throw the Dulles line in here. Would that change any if Dulles were not there, if you're just doing population projections?
The understanding is that it may change the conclusions 1 year or 2 year, either way. But the major components of Dulles is ridership associated with Dulles was ridership from the core out to Tysons. Transfers from people who are coming in from Vienna onto the new line inbound, riders from Loudoun County into Tysons and then being replaced at Tysons coming inbound. So the infrastructure that was associated with with the Dulles corridor is really supporting the Dulles corridor's ridership. So the conclusions from this are largely the same whether the Dulles project is built or not.
I think that's very important because one of the issues that the Federal Transit Administration kept throwing at us was if you build Dulles, you won't be able to move the people anyway because you have to expand your capacity. And you're saying, doesn't make any difference, we got to expand the capacity whether or not we build Dulles.
That's correct.
That is right.
And a comment on the, I think, we were very mindful in doing the analysis that we wanted to take the official demographic forecast that the region produces. I think Marin is absolutely correct. There are factors out there that could make this a very conservative forecast. This is, I think, to us, a very galvanizing finding as it is. When you look at the past growth that we've had, whether it's just the peak capacity through our max load points or whether it's expansion that's off peak in the evenings, which is the source of the greatest growth and where we do actually still have capacity, you do see demographic trends with increased urbanization, increased numbers of looking at relocating to the center of the region, and gas prices are something that we don't have a basis for predicting how it would be deflected. So I think we can take this pretty confidently as, you know, this maybe the most conservative estimate of what the impact would be, and if anything, we may have to go faster in responding to it than we're actually showing.
Madam Chair, just to kind of reinforce all the points being made, because I noted that 2006 COG data was what was used, I believe, the 7.0 version. I know that if you looked at today, that analysis would show you something drastically different in terms of where the jobs are locating, where are people buying homes, and again, if there was a way we could model the behavior due to gas prices, I think it would be in the change the projections as well.
Thank you, Mr. Harrington. You can continue.
Next slide shows the impact of fleet expansion, and here we're assuming that we ramp up to 75% eight-car trains in the peak hour by 2015 and 100% eight-car trains by 2020. And what this shows is it extends the adequate system capacity out by about 5 to 10 years, but clearly by 2030 we're back to a congested situation, and I guess what we're going to look at is we look at recommended improvements. That this table illustrates some of the station level issues that we encountered. I should caution, this was primarily for screening purposes where we looked at flow rates. Each station has individual characteristics that may determine its needs. But what we did find was that most of the critical capacity constraints are in the core. And that's not a surprise to folks. We did have Shady Grove showing up outside the core, and in the 2030 that does assume Porter City's transitways in place at Shady Grove, which would probably be a major factor in Shady Grove's capacity needs.
Question.
Yes. On this table, which are core stations, which are not?
On the left, we've highlighted the core that popped down, Metro Center.
I don't really understand that. I note missing from here in particular is Roslyn, whereas you do have Courthouse Station in there, and I'm not sure why Courthouse, other than it's my favorite station. That should be obvious, but
good enough reason to put it there.
But all seriousness, why is Courthouse there?
Basically, as I said, it's a screening exercise. Courthouse, from the ridership forecast that we did, showed that it had capacity issues. However, at this level, the model is not as accurate as it would be, say, at the system level, and we understand that there's...
What was the before the however? Why is Courthouse there?
Based on the forecast that we did, we were showing growth, high growth in Courthouse area.
This is just where you're anticipating much growth? Is that... there's growth anticipated there, but there's more growth probably anticipated at Clarendon, which is lower today than Courthouse, so it'll probably have a more dramatic level of growth, but they're all lower than Alston or Roslyn.
Tom can definitely speak more to the methodological strengths and weaknesses of the model that was used, but it's much better, it's much stronger on a grouping of stations forecast basis than it is on individual stations basis. So this, I think the point that Tom was making was this is, as a result of the model output, if you look at a station, you know, station by station particulars, you could screen out which ones might or might not make sense. This is what the model output, we'd have to look at it in more detail to say whether it's actually motivated by the ridership that's occurring there. But when you look at the group of stations, Boston, Boston, Carter, the model's going to be very, you know, we're confident in that.
I'd be interested, of all the stations, Courthouse isn't the one that jumps out at me as likely to have the greatest constraints. I noticed Pentagon City isn't there, and that's one that has obvious constraints to the station at all. And again, another place there's a lot of development coming. It's already almost the busiest station, Virginia, second to Roslyn, I believe. Finally, how are you defining core?
The same definition that was used in the core capacity study, so.
That includes Roslyn?
Yeah, and Pentagon.
Not Pentagon.
Right on the edge.
I think that's one of the things you'll have to look at the definition of core and why it's core as you go forward, too. Thank you.
But before you go forward.
Yeah.
What you were looking at here was our vertical transportation and our fare gates. One of the things we've often done in the past is used our fare gates and our vertical transportation to meter flow in order to not get overcrowding on platforms. And in fact, we've argued that in many cases you should not improve vertical transportation or fare gates unless you can improve the platforms. Have you looked at platforms?
Not in any detail in this study. The issue here was on normal flow, we know platform capacity is an issue, is not an issue. Rather, we have trains unload that are offload that it could be a significant issue. But we know it's something that we want to look at in more detail, particularly for the core stations, through perhaps pedestrian simulation, or something where we can get into more detail about mix between waiting areas and passenger flow through that.
I guess what I'm raising is how conservative is our analysis again? It says, if in fact we do get to the point that we have constraints in both our vertical transportation and fare gates, we probably also have constraints on our platforms, which says that the investment required is even larger than anything we're talking about here, substantially larger.
I would, just to echo what Mr. Benjamin just said, if the Franconia Springfield station, if I'm reading that correctly, it's a vertical capacity issue at 2030. You're prompting the need for a study at that point. I would suggest with the recent BRAC announcement and 20,000 that it near that station that we particularly pay attention to that one and timeline the BRAC implementation.
And I guess I'd also like to just come back to the point that this is a view of systems capacity over a 25-year time frame, and it's a system-level capacity. So it's, you know, it's analogous to regional traffic demand forecast for the region in which your attention is really being called to the major trends, major picture conclusions over the 25-year period. The model is to give discipline to the model. It has specific outputs, but what it is on a specific station could be variable. Time frame and so this motivates a lot of much more detailed analysis type that you are all suggesting. But I do want to bring us back to, you know, I think the next slide is the big picture conclusions and findings that we want to call your attention to.
Okay, for the 2010 to 2020 time frame, first we're advocating completing ramp up to 100% 8-car trains by 2020, including the power systems and storage facilities that would be associated with that. Basically, trying to get the most capacity out of our existing system. Implementation of blue line realignment is needed in order to basically increase capacity over the river, and this, without massive investment, this is the one way we can optimize our portals. We're also saying, based on the findings about the core, that some of the improvements that were in the core capacity study will be very much needed. In particular, the graphic picture here shows a concept for a station connection pedestrian tunnel. There are two that we've looked at in the past, Farragut North to Farragut West, and Metro Center to Gallery Place. Throughout the core, the addition of escalators and stairways will be needed to relieve some of the vertical capacity issues. But we're also looking ahead to station access, recognizing that in order for people to get to the station, there are going to be improvements that are needed. In particular, whether coming by auto, by bus, biking and walking, there'll be needs in all those areas. We put a note here that if we were going to maintain our current auto access mode share, the need is 36,000, even after you factor in the spaces that would be in the Dulles extension. So our parking needs are quite great, and of course our ability to do that may affect whether that's achievable. And then finally, expanding the region's bus service and integrating with some of the planned streetcar and light rail lines will be needed to supplement Metro capacity, particularly along major corridors.
Could you explain that?
Well, what we're looking at is, with a conservative forecast, we're looking with 75% eight-car trains in 2015 and eight-car trains, 100% eight-car trains in 2020, confident we can carry the rail traffic that we forecast. But we know that there are already challenging passenger congestion issues, and we know that there are routes where we could actually, with substituting high-quality bus service, we could supplement the capacity that's in those corridors. We could provide alternate routes for people who are commuting on the rail system right now. And so there's the potential for rail relief through the establishment of a much higher capacity, higher quality bus network. We'll actually be coming back next month to present to you a proposal for 24 corridors, a very substantial six-year program of bus corridor improvements. But the point here is, I guess the point here is that the tools that we have over the next 8 years, over the next 20 years or so, is we need to manage the system that we have, the assets that we have, to get the most capacity out of what we have. We need to develop a parallel bus network and look to the right-of-way, streets in the region, streetcars, light rail, bus networks, and we need to add rail cars. And those are the three pillars of the strategy that we have that we'll be coming back to you in July when we talk about the capital plan, what our needs are over 2011 to 2020. But, I mean, it's a system redundancy. It's supplementing rail service capacity.
Sure. Let me ask you a related question. How does this relate to some of the new projects that are on the planning stage?
In fact, that directly ties in. One of the presentations we will bring back next few months is to outline the role that we need to play in coordinating all of the regional services, not dictating what happens, to make sure when a program goes in the state of Maryland, it's integrated with our system, time standpoint, we have the ability to provide the resources necessary, coordinate with the services in the District of Columbia that are planned, and coordinate with the services that are planned in Commonwealth of Virginia. In addition, the local bus systems are expanding. We're going to sit down with them to make sure we're integrating services, we're not duplicating services, there's connectiveness of the system. That's one of the items that we will bring back, that Metro needs to expand regional responsibility, helping coordinate all of those services.
What do we need as an agency to, I mean, we should be the mobility manager for the region, because of the position that we stand. So what is it that we need to enable us to do that? We seem to be constantly kind of begging, cajoling, talking to our partners, and sometimes, I mean, in order to get buy-in, you have to do that. But that takes such a long period of time, and even with that, we still have the independent nature of the regional partners, which sometimes leaves us outside of these things that are being planned and similar especially in the future. Do we need something to work?
We're going to bring forth that discussion to the board in the next few months. Needing something was not really in my mindset. I think we already have the abilities to do that. Need to execute those authorities more than what we had in the past. That will require some resources, but it's not a significant resource issue. It is a change in how we enact the authority given to us under the compact.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Dunn. I guess I wanted to see if we rephrase it and ask the question, is there a particular leadership role that we want to play in order to do that, reaching out to the others, because I think that's another, I think, critical role that if we are the regional transit folks, that may be the way to play that, and I think it goes back to what we did with the regional bus summit and those things.
Yes.
All right. You want to finish, Mr.
Jefferson? The bottom line is that even with all eight-car trains, system capacity, we're finding, will be maxed out by 2030, and there's a need to start planning for beyond 2030. The graphic shown here was from the core capacity study, and there are different elements from that study that we think have value. Pocket Tracks would allow some flexibility, add storage and turnaround capability. Interline connections also give us some flexibility and the potential, perhaps even increased capacity at some of the key portals. For example, the location shown circled as one, with a potential connection between Courthouse and Arlington Cemetery, would allow train states to stay in Virginia without crossing into the DC core, for example. And then finally, the core capacity study was clear that there is a need to increase capacity across the river, and there's also an increase, a need to increase the portal capacity, and the way to do that would be to separate lines. And they talked about a potential line here separating the blue and the orange line, the connection into DC, today with an east-west distribution role. Also quite possible that as we continue with planning, we'd also see potential for separating the yellow and the green with a north-south type distribution role. And what we're saying here is, as we get out closer to 2030, we need to start planning, we need to start designing and looking ahead to funding those kinds of improvements in order to stay ahead of the growth.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I think it might be useful just for to frame for folks, because we're talking about tunnels through really densely built urban center. Order of magnitude costs per mile for metro rail versus light rail versus BRT.
Yeah. Pat, 200 million miles
for the rail. I'm sorry. Yeah. 200 million miles for the rail.
That's the current cost for, you know, based on the aerial structure.
And we can bring back those type of details. Those dollars change depending upon certain environment, what right-of-ways are available.
I think this is really important. I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, we're all looking at that, and I'm thinking of that part of the city and what it looks like now. We certainly don't want to make it a war zone when we build tunnels. I think I think really where the opportunity is, I think it was mentioned before, is using existing right-of-way more effectively to find capacity. And I think that's, I mean, it's good to have the numbers in your head so you get a sense of what the opportunity cost is there and what the benefits are. So I think it'd be useful to have that for the.
I think there's a good point to be made here. What we've just seen is a presentation that, as far as I can tell, is more or less the same presentation 6 years ago when the core capacity was done.
Yeah.
I may be missing something, but there's not a lot that's new here. And what was true then is true now. You had projections then about how, you know, growth in the region is going to overwhelm the system's capacity. And we had charts there that showed all kinds of red, which, as I noted, we've been able to push back because part of what we did as a result of that, almost all we did really, was Metro Matters. The implications of this are a substantial generational investment in the system in a number of ways that are, you know, indicated just on the slide that's in front of us right now. Time. Folks said, there's just no way we're biting off this 30-year problem. So, and that same year, we came up with a 10-year plan. We said, what are the things that you really got to do? Some of which are still on there that were talked about, like adding storage tracks. That's less dramatic. People don't know what that is, but it actually can help reduce some of the inflexibility in the system. And you might be able to add something. But that was too expensive. We didn't do that either. But we were able to get the state and local governments, basically, and some federal money, although less than we expected, and put it together to deal with the things that were most immediately could be done, which in particular was going to eight-car trains. And so Metro Matters was investing every bit we could get the state and local governments to agree to commit to over really a six-year period of time so that we weren't in big trouble within 5-6 years. And the fact of the matter is, every day to day, we're able to, you know, we carried 800,000 people on 2 weekdays this month so far that I know of. We wouldn't have been able to do that back 6 years ago. But the out year forecasts are still what they were. And, you know, again, I maintain that anything that's a low ball, given the change in trends, what I think is going to be changing development pattern, prices of oil, and all of that. But so we still have this really big problem. So that's one thing. We have the same big problem we've always had. And at some point, dealing with it involves really big investment. The one thing, though, that if we're going to go forward and update this, and I do think, as Mr. Monoma said, you know, if you look at the reasons why we haven't worked on a lot of this, you'll get that as soon as you get the cost estimate. Because the line that would put a new, it wasn't a tunnel, actually. It was to hang a line under the key bridge to go into Georgetown, which engineering was done and said we could do it. But that's tunneling under Georgetown, it's new tunneling on the Virginia side, it was running a new line out, I-66, hung off the sides or elevated or whatever, and there were billions of dollars involved that no one had, and no one could imagine getting. So I think you're going to wind up, some of these things probably should be in our plan, including pocket tracks and turnaround areas, and the interline connections like they're shown there in 1 and 4, I think almost certainly should be done given the growth pattern. But some things are going to be very hard, and I think Mr. Monoma had it right when he said, you know, you have to look comprehensively at what are the other things you could do that don't involve at least $200 million a mile, because that was the estimate we got back when we did this. So my guess is it's higher than that. And that brings us to some of the things that we have been talking about this year, in particular, how do we use the surface, how do we use the infrastructure that's already built on the highways and on our streets. A whole lot of people, if you're willing to dedicate space to transit, you can supplement the rail system and have a more integrated network that, in fact, will encourage more people to use transit. But you have to be willing to say some of the ground above is going to be set aside for transit. That is part of the concept also known as complete streets. If the idea is that any lane that a car can be used has to be filled with cars, then we will never move people very efficiently. We'll never be able to afford to do all the stuff to put everybody underground either. So it really has to move us toward looking at a conversation region-wide, Mr. Cato was referring to, with all the jurisdictions who control all this right-of-way to say, how do you use it most efficiently? Because there's no way we're going to build our way out of it by, you know, building more highways for cars and more tunnels for trains with the growth we have and the limits we're going to have on our economic reasons.
Thank you, Mr. I hope that we can keep moving on this one because we do have a meeting that follows at this time. It should start.
So just a quick
Mr. Herring, you want to conclude here?
You can just get to next steps. Many of them we've already spoken about. Next month we'll be coming back with a presentation on our priority bus corridor network. In July we'll be bringing to the board our proposed 2011 to 2020 capital improvement plan. Just two significant elements. One is the state of good repair requirements, which are significant in and of themselves and relate to the support for the rail cars that we already have, and then the capacity enhancement needs that we would expect would be associated with expansion of rail cars to 75% and ultimately 100% rail cars and the associated power and guard storage and other station capacity needs. Later in 2009, we would like to get a capital funding agreement to begin July 2010 that covers this 10-year period. In the next year, we are also going to need to begin engineering and project development activities for these things that we're talking about. We need to begin immediately to be ready to do the things at the time that we need to do them in the 2011-2015 period so that we can implement power and facility. And then in the 2015-2020 period, we want to, as I said, expand the rail fleet to allow 75% and 100% of our train service. Now, big picture, next steps, and conclude our presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Benjamin, you have a comment.
Yeah, and it really relates to what we're going to see in July and then what the implications of that are, and relates also to what Mr. Zimmerman just said.
Yes.
In July, we're going to hear, I presume, that in the period 2011-2020, our needs will far exceed the availability of funds just to stay within the state of good repair. And so what we're going to do is we're going to come in and say, given what the jurisdictions have been contributing, given what the federal government is contributing, we're going to have trouble just staying within a state of good repair without even worrying about capacity enhancement needs. That's about the way it looks, because especially when in 2012 to 2015, we're going to start replacing all of our rail cars, which are now over 30 years old. So that's going to be the base before we even get to the presentation that we're talking about today. The only way that this is going to start happening is if the federal government becomes a participant. And we are not the only transit system in the United States that has this problem. Every major transit system in the United States is looking at the very same problem, that they're having trouble staying at their state of good repair, and they can see their capacity expansion is really, really going to constrain them over time because they have no way to fund it. One of the things that's going to be happening over the next year or two is a new authorization bill, which looks to the federal government to do some funding, and one of the elements of that has got to be the capacity enhancement needs. It's something that is not there now. It is not something that the federal government has committed to. If in fact we're going to have the global warming issues that we're talking about, if we're going to have the gas price issues that we're talking about, if we are going to care about our environment, the federal government is going to have to step up and start to fund this, not only here, but everywhere in the United States.
Sounds like a half the press conference.
It sounds like more than after the press conference, it sounds like the initiative that's needed in order for us to move forward really from a national perspective of recommitting ourselves to transportation that is more than narrowly focused but broadly focused as it was 40 years ago.
That's
the story in a nutshell, I think. Appreciate your comments, but they're not inconsistent with, I think, with all of us feeling. I think this has been a very critical presentation for us, though, because I think it bodes work that we need to begin in 2008 for starting the process, most importantly, for the next stage of what has been our capital improvement funding. Is there any other business? Hearing none, and we're adjourned. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair.